Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's good to have everybody with us. And I'll start with the Dim New World file before we go to the conservative media distraction of the week and all of that. This may explain all of that, as a matter of fact. Newser.com reports that the FDA has bestowed breakthrough status on LSD. Why? To relieve symptoms of anxiety and depression with a single dose. That's right. Surprise, surprise. The FDA says that getting high relieves anxiety with a single dose. What a breakthrough. And so now studies will be funded and research grants will be awarded. One has been awarded to Mind Medicine's MM120, which is a variation of lysergic acid diethylamide, LSD, the famous, yes, that one. The psychedelic drug is now approved by the government for anxiety. That's right. They 12 weeks after receiving a dose, half of patients were in remission, and two-thirds saw significantly improved symptoms.
Really?
Yes, symptoms. Symptoms include not being happy all the time. Other symptoms included feeling anxious about obligations and relationships. And the one symptom that they didn't include in the study that we would suggest is a symptom of feeling guilty about sin. That's surprisingly, drugging yourself can temporarily relieve anxiety and guilt over sin. And there's been significant improvements. That's according to the company who funded the study. That's of psychedelic drugs. And so I have a quote here from Dr. Daniel. He's an assistant professor of psychiatry, which isn't real medicine. Psychiatry is the practice of handing out drugs to temporarily relieve anxiety about obligations and relationships and guilt people feel over sin. That's the business of psychiatry. And Dr. Daniel is an assistant professor at a prestigious university, I'm sure. It's so prestigious it need not even be named. According to Dr. Daniel, he says, quote, the clinical improvements was more than double today's standard of care, which today's standard of care is some other drug to get you high to relieve symptoms, including not being happy all the time, feeling anxious about obligations and relationships, and guilt and remorse felt over sinful behavior. All right. Dr. Daniel spoke exclusively in an interview with CNN. That's right. And he says that the results occurred at all levels of anxiety, from moderate all the way up to severe, whatever that means. Well, nobody knows what that means, but they're all on drugs, so. It's the first study, by the way, to show that a single dose of LSD can effectively treat anxiety without psychotherapy. That's right. They're going to forget the psychotherapy. We're just going to go straight for the psychedelic drugs. That's right. No psychotherapy required, according to Gabriella, a psychedelic researcher at McGill University, who was not involved with the trial, but likely on drugs herself, and so was eminently qualified to comment on taking drugs to get high to make you feel better about things that make you feel lousy. All right. So there we have it. That's from the Dim New World file. That's where. And meanwhile, while that's going on, a legitimate study of psychedelic drugs for people who don't feel happy all the time. Now, the Liberty Daily is reporting that amid a national epidemic of opioid overdose deaths, the Biden administration is announcing what they call, quote, the challenge to save lives from overdose, unquote. That's the challenge. And the White House calls it a nationwide call to action to stakeholders across all sectors to save lives. It sounds like they're announcing something from the Death Star.
Yeah,
or a nationwide call to action, all sectors. they want to increase training and awareness and commitment to saving lives with governmental policies that would make it unthinkable to traffic in dangerous drugs. No. Opioid reversal medications are now going to be available on airplanes and in all schools. That's right. The White House said? Although a building can't speak, the White House said is what they issue when nobody actually wants to get up behind a lectern and say this, because they wouldn't want to field any questions related to any of this. And so the White House said, quote, an overdose can happen anywhere to anyone, says the White House. And so you're thinking, well, really, anyone? Anywhere? Well, what if they're not taking drugs? Then it wouldn't happen anytime to anyone. But the White House says an overdose can happen anywhere to anyone. They must mean people who are standing too close to Hunter Biden. And you just brush up against him and you never know what you could get on you. So as far as they're concerned, anytime, any moment, it could happen. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, otherwise known as the CDC, synthetic opioids such as fentanyl are largely to blame for the increase in the aforementioned opioid overdose deaths. What we used to just call ODs or overdoses, we now call them opioid overdose deaths, because as a bureaucracy grows, words get added because there are departments and there are people who make their living processing the paperwork. And the more words you can produce, the better. And so overdoses are now opioid overdose deaths. And of course, the government is telling us that fentanyl is primarily responsible. Fentanyl, yes. Fentanyl plus sinful and criminal behavior. But secular government is unable to address sin. And a government unable to address sin cannot long address crime. Because crime springs directly from sin. And the government's not allowed to believe in sin anymore. Because, you know, the wall of separation between church and state. If you say sin, you're shoving your religion down other people's throats. We'd rather shove Narcan up their nose than shove your religion down their throat, you theocratic fundamentalist. Anyway, so here's the truth of it. An American government uninformed by Christian doctrine is dangerous. And it becomes more and more harmful. And it creates more and more harm until eventually that government either falls or is conquered. That's it. So while this story finds its way to our desk from the blind leading the blind file, it could also be in the decline and fall file, because that's where we're headed. A government uninformed by Christian doctrine is dangerous. And by informed, I'm not calling for a theocracy. By informed, I simply mean the politicians should feel an obligation to be acceptable in the eyes of the ministers. The politicians should feel beholden to the ministers, to the churches. But the churches are all a mess. The churches are all... The politicians are now... The politicians now view the churches as subordinate to the government, whereas when the country was founded, the government felt itself subordinate to the churches. And so now that that role has been reversed, we are steadily, rapidly declining, falling, and headed toward either collapse or conquest, which is just the natural order of things. I'm not a prophet or anything. You don't have to have special revelation to understand that that's what's headed our way. All right, now the conservative media distraction of the week, I declared, was the ban on TikTok. The ban on TikTok and who said it should be banned, who said it shouldn't be banned, and why, and all of that. Everyone spent the whole week talking about that, and none of it means a thing. Mm-hmm. It's just a way to distract from the fact that we're allowing our children to entertain themselves into madness and self-destruction. That's the big issue. The fact that our children are consuming what they consume on TikTok, that's the big problem. That's the question. That's the issue that we should be discussing. What's going on? Discussing the fact that parents and society are allowing this to go into their children's eyes and their minds. That's the big issue. But instead, we have a fake ban on one particular channel of filth and degradation going into the eyes and the minds of the children. And there's plenty of fundraising to be made on both sides, and all of the media gets to report their various takes on it. And various politicians are called traitors, and various politicians are called saviors. And nobody draws attention to the fact that parents are responsible for what goes into the eyes and the minds of their children. And that's the problem. But you can't point that out because, again, the government is not allowed to acknowledge the existence of sin, and so they've become dangerous. And the media feeds on that, and that's the big distraction of the week. And meanwhile, what's happening in America with real people is a bloodbath. So the term bloodbath is in the news this week. Well, let's just go to the bloodbath file, where an 11-year-old Chicago boy was trying to protect his mother from a man who forced his way into her home. The man forced his way into the woman's home in the Chicago, Illinois area. He brutally attacked the woman and the child. The child was trying to protect his mother. The child, the article doesn't say exactly what happened. Maybe they don't know yet because it is early. But the 11-year-old boy died at the hospital of his injuries. We would assume at the hands of the 37-year-old maniacal killer who forced his way into their house and attacked him and his mom, killed him and wounded the mom. The mom's in the hospital. The mom was pregnant, by the way. And it turns out that the maniacal killer was the knife-wielding ex-boyfriend of the pregnant mom, mother of the 11-year-old who died trying to protect his mom from her boyfriend. So the story is disturbing on so many levels. What can you say about this? Oh, by the way, the mother had a lifetime order of protection against the killer boyfriend. Well, that means it was effective because it lasted. Well, actually, she didn't die. So the lifetime order of protection was violated by the killer, but it lasted for the entire lifetime of her son. So in that respect, I suppose the bureaucracy could declare it a success. They'll probably issue a renewal or an extra double enforcement order on that lifetime order of protection. The mad dog killer is in jail now, and he's been charged with one count of attempted murder, home invasion with a dangerous weapon, murder, domestic battery, robbery with a dangerous weapon, felon in possession of a weapon, and violation of an order of protection. He's been charged with all of that, and he will be processed through the bureaucracy, as he had been. He was paroled the Tuesday prior to the murder. It's just, and now he'll be processed through the just system by the bureaucrats who make their living processing mad dog criminals through the system. And the order of protection is one order of magnitude less for all of us. Shotgun. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for tuning in this week. Here at the McBurney Compound, we have not issued a ban on TikTok. Hasn't been banned. Nor have we issued a ban on tattoos. There's no ban on tattoos or on TikTok. We haven't had the need to ban either one because they are banished from the mind of the community here at the McBurney Compound. The community. Yeah, that's right.
I know.
That's right.
What is that?
So the way to ban TikTok is to educate your children so they have no desire to entertain themselves at the foolishness of others for 35 seconds at a time. That's... So try that. It's too late for that. So I guess once it's too late for that, you just have to ban various channels of the filth that wants to make its way into your children's mind because you haven't inoculated your children against the filth. And it's not that any one of us couldn't fall into being entertained by this stupidity and filth. It is a prevalent temptation for all. And if you get to the point where you have to ban it or you have to act like you're banning it because it's an election year, you really need to check yourself because your civilization is on the brink of collapse or conquest. Now, back to tattoos. How did I get distracted from tattoos? Now, this is from the Decline and Fall file. There was a recent study analyzing the chemistry of various tattoo inks, pigments they call them. Out of 54 inks, over 80% contained unlisted additives or pigments, and adulterants included polyethylene glycol. That must be bad because it has a lot of syllables, and it sounds like a chemical. And propylene glycol, even worse. I heard there was polyethylene glycol, but when they said it was propylene glycol, I knew that was a bridge too far. That's right. There were other higher alkanes found throughout tattoo inks. And then the article goes on. This is from Zero Hedge. It goes on to say all the bad things polyethylene glycol can do to you if you breathe it in nonstop for 15 years. And then they have other phenoxyethanol, other scary chemicals, health risks to nursing infants. Well, that's one thing the tatted up generation won't have to worry about. Is any of their nursing infants because they're out getting high and getting tattoos and they're not having kids, at least not like they used to. Other inks tested were contaminated with an antibiotic used to treat urinary tract infection. That might just been from the tattoo artist rubbing up on you there by accident. You know, maybe she was... All right, let's leave that aside because it's just too gross to think about. The researcher... testing the various tattoo inks was unable to identify whether unlisted ingredients were added unintentionally or whether the manufacturer was provided with contaminated material. It's also unknown whether the manufacturer incorrectly labeled the ink. So nobody knows anything about any of the stuff that you're tattooing into your arm and your chest and your neck and your face. Nobody knows anything about any of it. But you know what? These are the same kind of people who will lecture you on what you eat and drink and talk to you about your diet. They got the tattoo. They got the polyethylene glycol coursing through their veins, but they never touch they won't touch red meat because it's bad for you. It's bad for the environment. The polyethylene glycol that's measurable in your urine, that has no, it's bad for the. All right. here we have a note from the. From the discussion in the study, I'm sorry. If a person with a tattoo starts experiencing reactions, unlisted ingredients can make it challenging to ascertain what reaction is happening and why it is occurring. So when you think about reactions to tattoos, I think of reactions like, hey, I now have zero respect for you anymore. Now that I saw that tattoo on your foot, mom of 60 years old with the brand new tattoo, you've lost all respect. That's my reaction. And another reaction to a new tattoo, hey, don't come around here anymore. We don't need that around here. Those are reactions that, well, I think they're talking about physical reactions to the various chemicals, but the study concludes that we're hoping manufacturers will take this as an opportunity to reevaluate their processes, and that tattoo artists and their clients will push for better labeling and manufacturing. What are the odds of that? Do you think the tattoo artists and their clients are going to read the clinical data that shows they're basically poisoning one another and push for better anything? They're getting tattoos, for crying out loud. They're by definition, practicing unhealthy behavior. It's unhealthy. It's all around unhealthy. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, that's one of the lures of the tattoo. It's the doing the unhealthy thing right in the face of everything that's good and right, that people get a thrill. It's like why the teenage boys smoke cigarettes. I'm going to get the fire and I'm going to tell you that it's a burning cooking and it's only 2 inches from my face, but I'm so brave. Fire doesn't scare me. I could get cancer, sure, but I'm not devil may care. Anyway. But here's the study. Here's the data. Let's see what good it does. It reminds me of all the studies that we've documented over at kgov.com and Real Science Radio on the dangerous effects of marijuana. All the potheads and all the pot dealers and the pot growers, they've all know the data. But the marijuana industry continues to grow and grow and grow, and more people get more and more stoned. And so anyway, there you go. And this is just another symptom of the decline and fall of Western civilization. That's why this story finds its way to us from the Decline and Fall file. We are living in a society where tattoo parlors have replaced churches, along with gyms and med spas. Yeah. Med spas, gyms, and tattoo parlors where you used to have churches. And the churches that remain are fairly thin. So when it comes to their ability to form the threads, the ties that bind a civilization together, the churches that still exist are fairly thin and pathetic, and so it's all very sad. If you have to tell your children you're not allowed to get a tattoo, you've made a mistake. You've exercised your responsibility for child rearing in an unsatisfactory manner, at an unsatisfactory level. That's right. You can consider yourself a failure. If you're upset that your child got a tattoo, even worse. If you can't drag your kid away from the TikTok and you want the Senate to ban it, same thing. It's very sad. All right, now speaking of the decline and fall of America, we go to West Point. Yes, this is from the Insurrection File. The United States Military Academy, known as West Point. Their mission statement has always included the terms duty, honor, and country. That I'll just read from it. To educate a corps of cadets committed to the values of duty, honor, and country. Those are the relevant words from the Military Academy's mission statement. Those words have been removed. The new mission statement now says to build a corps of cadets committed to the Army values. Okay, so they've replaced duty, honor, and country with the Army values. It's still three words. But what does that mean, the Army values? Because the Army values have been different between different armies throughout the history of the world. Some armies, almost all of them, their values were really bad. Like almost all of them. Duty, honor, and country, at least those are definable words that had some context in something other than warfare. But the Army values, well, I don't know what that means. In a message, the head of West Point is, I'm not even going to say her name, his name, it could be a tranny, who knows. The officer in charge at the military academy addressed the reason for the change, saying, quote, duty, honor, and country is foundational. Is foundational? Duty, honor, and country are foundational, is what I would have said, but So apparently you don't have to be an English major to, and that's fine. Okay, I'm not going to, we don't necessarily need English professors in charge of our war fighting troops. But still, I mean, duty, honor, and country is foundational. Duh. And says the general, duty, honor, and country will always remain our motto. However, we've removed those words from our motto. No, he doesn't say that. Because he thinks we're all too stupid to follow the story. He says, duty, honor, and country will always remain our motto. However, to win wars requires us to assess ourselves regularly. Any other questions? So everyone's like, well, wait a second. You didn't answer the question. Why did you remove those words? And the general apparently doesn't have to answer the question because, well, those are the Army values. There you go. How about that? That's it. We should all understand each other perfectly well now in the context of the Army values. The general went on to note that the Secretary of the Army, a girl named Christine, and the Army Chief of Staff, a guy named Randy, approved the changes. As if to say, this wasn't me, this was them, and I agree with everything they did, of course, but I want to let you know that they did it. So if you want an answer, you can go and ask them, but according to the Army values, they don't have to answer you either. And don't ask us for the definitions of either duty, honor, or country. We all know what those mean. And they will always remain a part of our motto. They'll always remain a part of our mission statement. We just remove those words. What do words mean anyways? Come on. According to the Army values, words mean whatever the Army values say they mean. And let's move on to fight our wars, which apparently are occurring now, or at least are threatened, in the subways of New York, where the National Guard has been deployed by COVID hysteric. What's a Hochul? I don't even know her first name. Hokum Hochul. She's deployed the National Guard to the subway after letting crime run rampant to the level where people are terrified. People have to defend themselves physically on the subway from maniacs. After allowing that to happen, not allowing it, after facilitating a crime wave, now she sends in the National Guard and everybody says, oh, thank heaven, the National Guard. Thank you, Nancy. May I have another? Is her name Nancy Hochul? Francine Hochul? I can't remember. Anyway, so the fighting of our wars may take place in the subway and on the L train and eventually on the street corners downtown and then out into the suburbs. And then if they can make it out into the country, eventually the Army values will be fighting our wars against, well, all the criminals, you know, all the criminals. And then, you know, the criminals. And what are criminals? Well, according to the Army values, criminals are whoever the Army says are criminals. And then yada, yada, yada. You're in Hungary, 1964. Okay. Now, from the death penalty file, Republicans, that's right, Republicans, introduced legislation last week that would make sure illegal immigrants convicted of raping people are deported and permanently banned from the United States. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. And so the so-called conservatives don't know how to administer justice, not even to rapists. An illegal alien who rapes somebody, well, they need to be worried about more than deportation. But they don't know that. And besides, it's an election year, and we want to be hard on immigration. We want to take up the banner of immigration. There's an invasion going on, you know. Vote Republican. We'll deport the rapists. The legislation is titled the Protecting Our Communities from Sexual Predators Act, also called the POXPA. The POXPA. Any illegal alien who rapes an American will be immediately deported and banned from. How are you going to ban them? How are you even going to deport them? How about this? How about anyone who rapes anyone is tried, and upon conviction, they're immediately executed? That's how you administer justice. Oh, but that doesn't win any points with the anti-immigration voting blocks. So I forgot that's more important. I have a quote here from Representative, I'm a Republican, Vern Buchanan. Illegal aliens who sexually assault and rape Americans have absolutely no place in our society. Shockingly, illegals who commit rape are not immediately eligible for deportation, which is why we need this legislation, blah, 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 to help protect our communities. Now, notice that he only commits to helping protect our communities, not protect, help protect. Why? Because he knows he doesn't know how to actually protect. And when the next several hundred Americans are raped by illegals, he doesn't want anyone to mistakenly accuse him of having promised to protect anyone. He's a lawyer, and he was only trying to help. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. And as we come out of that lawyer trying to help from the death penalty file, talking about how do we handle the problem of illegal aliens raping Americans? Well, you handle that the same way as anyone who rapes anyone. And if you did that, it would be unthinkable for anyone to think about raping anyone except the one madman every many years. There's always crazies, right? But our governing officials no longer know how to administer justice. And I think it's all because they are fake, phony, fake. Like Ken Buck. Let's go to Ken Buck. Ken Buck, this is from the Insurrection File. Ken Buck has announced, I will depart Congress at the end of the week. He said that last week, so I think he's gone. Why is Ken Buck decided not to resign from Congress, not to not run again, not to let the voters speak their will in November and I'm stepping aside? Why does he say I'm leaving like now and then he's gone before it's almost as if he wants to get out of town before anything comes out. So anyway, he issued the obligatory statement. I look forward to spending more time with my family. Right. And which means he's going to spend less time engaged in whatever it is he's being blackmailed over. Whatever that was, he's going to do a lot less of that. Whatever the Obama Epstein administration had on him, he's going to do less of that. And here's the thing. Whatever they had on Ken Buck, it's nothing compared to what God-fearing Coloradans have known about Ken Buck for almost 20 years. When the pictures or the video or the dead body comes out about whatever it is Ken Buck did, none of us who followed his political career in Colorado would be surprised, because he's just a knife in your back, sleazy, of the lowest order, Ken Buck. And whatever was going to come out, now it's not going to come out, so we won't find out. Unless Ken Buck ever becomes a threat to the establishment again, or useful to the establishment again, at which point they'll hold whatever it is over his head again, and he'll do whatever they tell him to do. But whatever comes out about Ken, it won't make his demise any worse or better. He's already the lowest of the low to anyone who has ever relied on him. And you know what? It would be better if it came out, because perhaps his outing would be the first step toward repentance, in which case he should just stop dancing around it and just get it over with. Just let it come out, Ken. Let it all come out. Just repent. Because, you know, if you're just willing to repent and say, you know what, I'm a sinful guy and I did horrible things, I'm sorry. I'm going to go. I'm never going to step out in public again. I'm just going to try to repair my own broken life and all my broken relationships. That would be better. And the humiliation and the loss would be much easier to bear. And it might even end up in Ken Buck not going to hell, which is where he's headed right now. With jet rockets straight to hell for Ken Buck. All right. Former senator, no, congressman, what was he? Dog catcher in Colorado, whatever he was. Bottle washer. Just of the lowest order. Ambulance chaser. let's see now. From Ken Buck, we go quite naturally into a story from the National Pulse, reason number 2049. To get or keep your children out of the government schools. A settlement was reached last week between students. Let's see here. I'm sorry, not between students. Students had nothing to say about it. Students are innocent victims of the government schools and their parents and the teachers and the legislators and the school boards. I mean, the kids don't know any better. Mom and dad say go to school. The kids go to school. They don't understand that their ignorant, hapless parents are subjecting them to abuse. Well, down in Florida, you know, they put their foot down and they said, we're not going to let you talk to the younger kids about dirty movies and dirty books. We're going to draw the line. And so the line was drawn. You remember they called it the Don't Say Gay Act. Do you remember that? The left actually implied that the Republican governance in Florida was going to stop the queers, the homos, the perverts, and the faggots from talking about queer, homo, pervert, faggot subjects with the kids. And so they passed the law. Well, now a settlement has been reached to allow teachers to freely discuss sexual orientation and gender identity outside of instructional content. You see, the law that the Republicans in Florida passed said that the teachers wouldn't be allowed to put dirty books and dirty pictures and dirty movies in the instructional content. So the teachers have now said, okay, we're going to do that in after school type activities. And
that's even worse.
It's way worse. That's right. So 2 years after raising money and winning elections based on the illusion that they were protecting children from the perverts, now the perverts are going to be initiating discussions within classroom, not within the classroom. I'm sorry. That problem's been fixed. Now they're going to have after school clubs and other extracurricular activities that the perverts will be able to invite the kiddos to. And then they won't be violating the Republican ban on instructing kids on filth and corruption.
That's worse.
So here's the thing. Because the Republicans and the parents and society in general is unwilling to call this a crime. So to talk to a kid about sex is a crime. That's all. I mean, unless you're their parent and you're having that talk, which we have that talk, right? The parents have that talk. Outside of that, it's a crime to talk to a kid, especially to show them dirty movies and dirty pictures and dirty stories. And that's a crime. And so being unwilling to call it a crime and being unwilling to arrest people for it means it won't go away. It will only get worse. If it's not criminal, then by definition, it's good. And you can't ban what's good. Right? And so nobody's willing to say, well, this is not good. In fact, this is evil. Oh, nobody's willing to say it's evil because that would be anti-LGBTQ. But it's evil. And you have to call evil, evil. And lawyers like Ron DeSantis and the others running Florida and the world, they no longer appear able to recognize evil. And so they need our help. They need help from Jesus Christ. And we, as his people, we must be the conduit. Because obviously they don't know him. Ron DeSantis and the other lawyers running Florida, they don't know Jesus Christ, or they'd say this is evil criminal behavior. These people should be arrested. If they knew God, that's what they would say. So they obviously don't know him. So it falls to us to let them know about him and what he needs them to do so that at some point they would feel beholden to us to at least act right. You're probably never going to get the lawyers and the criminals running the government. You're probably never going to get them to be right or be good. But we could at least try to get them to act good. For the good of the innocent children. So that fewer of the innocent children are corrupted and perverted by growing up not knowing good from evil. Ron DeSantis, he doesn't know good from evil, and he's a grown man. He's going to answer for his own. But the kids that are going into his schools and being told that, well, we can't teach you this in the classroom, but we have an after-class, we have an after-school program for the... Actually, I have it right here. Now, this isn't Florida. This is California. Now, you think they're two opposite. California is left-wing, liberal, crazy. Florida, they're rock, rib, conservative, red state, MAGA, yeah, yeah. Right? So if you want to send your kids to school, you would obviously want to send them in Florida, where the LGBTQ dirty books have been banned out into the after-school. Though we're not going to have that in the classroom, and we want an election on that. We mean it. Well, out in Florida, parents at a California elementary school are outraged. Why are they outraged? They're outraged after discovering a third grade teacher formed an after school club called the UBU Club. That's right. This is at Pleasant Grove Elementary School in Elk Grove, California, where the third grade teacher invites students to attend private meetings to talk about sex. That's a third grade teacher inviting students. All right. So if you don't recognize that that's criminal, then you should probably be arrested. Anyone who doesn't recognize that as criminal is a criminal. You're not with the criminals. You are a criminal. That's criminal. For a third grade teacher to form a club at any time, anywhere, any place to talk to kids about sex, that creep needs to be arrested. That's all. And, of course, that's after school, which is legal in Florida. And so I think my point is made. Reason number 2051. Was that 2051? 249, 51? Anyway, we're getting right up there. Reasons to get or keep your children out of the government schools. The government schools are crawling with perverts. And the government is facilitating perverted behavior in the schools, after school, before school. It's almost as if the government is full of perverts. I mean, you got to wonder, why would you not recognize this as evil unless you were in on it? Forgive me if you think this is hyperbolic to insinuate that the people in the government and in the schools are child molesters. But I can't think of any other reason why you would not be not outraged. I wouldn't be outraged about an adult wanting to talk to my kid about sex. I would be pressing charges. And if I'm not able to press charges, anyway, it's going to be ugly. It's going to be more than outrage, I can tell you that. And if we're not able to press charges over things like that these days, then something needs to change immediately, if not sooner. And the governing officials need to know that, hey, whatever you guys are into, we're not into that. And so there needs to be a law that you can't talk to my kids about sex, any kids. And if there's not a law like that, well, then I suspect the people making laws are perverts and child molesters and creeps. That's all. And if that's where we are, then that's very sad. Now, this school in California where the parents are outraged that a third grade teacher wants to talk about sex with kids at a private club meeting after school. According to the article, the majority of parents did not support the club, but a small number were in favor. So again, identifying exactly who needs to be arrested.
What?
It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us, folks. We are rounding third, headed for home, and we get into the personhood file, where a federal judge, we're told, in Arizona has blocked a state law granting personhood to unborn fetuses. That's according to the report at AOL.com. Unborn fetus being a doubly dehumanizing term. Not only is the fetus unborn, but the unborn is a fetus. Anything but a person. These are the Untermenschen of the 21st century. The judge in Arizona wrote that Arizona's law was vague. And the defendants who supported the law failed to show that the policy would not cause injury because its impact on abortion access was unclear. Really, is it unclear to say that you can't do abortions? That seems really clear. So to say that it's unclear, you can't kill the person because it's a person, that's pretty clear. But the judge in Arizona says it wasn't clear because he's lying. He just wants to overthrow any law that would stop any abortion. And I haven't read this alleged personhood law in Arizona. I'm sure that it's not what anything I would support because I don't support any exceptions. And it's not that I don't support any exceptions. It's that there are no exceptions. And so if there are no exceptions, we shouldn't say there are because you're going to face God someday. And do you want to have to explain? I mean, I don't want to have to explain that. I'm not going to have to explain that. But the judge, this judge who thinks it's unclear to say that an unborn baby is a person, well, he's going to have to. So the judge went on to say that the application of this law that says an unborn child is a person, its application is so unclear that people of ordinary intelligence cannot figure it out in advance and they won't know how to comply with it. Labeling the unborn a person, says the judge, may mean abortion constitutes a homicide. What do you mean, may mean? It does mean. That's exactly what it means, judge. That's why it's so clear. Judge? Then we have quotes from various, of course. So people of ordinary intelligence cannot figure it out. If you ask a second grader, walk a second grader up to a pregnant woman and point at the tummy and ask, what is that? They'll say it's a baby. So, and that could even be a second grader of below average intelligence, frankly. It takes someone educated in law school to say that you can't comprehend that, Judge Reyes there in Arizona. See, we have a quote from the president of the National Council of Jewish Women Who Kill Their Children in Arizona. Oh, no, that's, it's just the National Council of Jewish Women. And, she says, personhood criminalizes pregnant people, allowing state surveillance and regulation of their conduct. So do you get this? So she's implying that if a government has a law against murder, that's basically allowing state surveillance and regulation of everyone's conduct. So is that what you're implying, Sivia, over at the National Council of Jewish Women Who Kill Their Babies in Arizona? That we can't have laws against murder because that basically allows the state to surveil us and to regulate our conduct, meaning they're going to be watching us all the time and making sure we don't kill anybody. I thought we already had that. Oh, she just doesn't want that applied to the least of us. That's all. I have another quote here from Jessica, an attorney for the Center for Reproductive Rights for People Who Kill Their Babies in Arizona. She called this personhood legislation unthinkably extreme. It's an abortion ban. It's catastrophic. It'll unleash chaos. Cause a state of fear. It's a threat to essential health care, says the Jessica who kills her babies in Arizona. So all of the key words, AOL, of course, good at getting in the keyword. Catastrophic, unleashed chaos, yeah, essential healthcare, state of fear, unthinkably extreme, and the ever-popular abortion ban, which even the opponents of child killing are afraid to call for a ban on child killing. But the froth at the mouth baby killers, they call even thinking about banning abortion, they just call it an abortion ban. And then they send out fundraising letters. And both sides continue to raise funds. Both sides continue to make claims about what they're doing to either stop or facilitate the murder of unborn children. And the murder of unborn children continues unabated. So that takes us to, can I do this story after that? Why don't I do this first? From the Decline and Fall file, we have a new survey. A new survey was conducted and published in the AUA journals. I'm not sure what that is. They found that twice as many men, they found that people who undergo sex change operations are twice as likely to attempt suicide after the surgery. Shocking, right? So you have a mentally unstable person, and then you have them undergo a life-altering surgical procedure, and that doubles the chance they want to kill themselves? Did we need a study for that? Apparently we needed a study for that. I would have guessed that, and you could have given me half of whatever you funded this study for. I would have been able to. Let's see. The study found that rates of psychiatric emergencies are high both before and after surgery. Really? So men who dress up and pretend to be women and who think they're women, and women who dress up like men, you're saying that they have a high incidence of psychiatric emergencies? Huh. Interesting. It must be because of all that discrimination out there. The authors of the study concluded that this... after surgery, the rates of psychiatric emergencies increased dramatically. And the authors concluded that... Due to the higher risk, post-surgical patients should be counseled appropriately. Counseled appropriately? What does that mean? What does that mean? How do you counsel? So you counsel that boys pretending to be girls try to kill themselves a lot, and so be careful about that? How do you counsel? I mean, once you've taken a mentally unstable person and facilitated a life-altering surgical procedure, how much counseling can you give them after that? Do you warn them that, by the way, boys pretending to be girls try to kill themselves more often, according to the study, than girls pretending to be boys? Why is that? Well, I don't know. Maybe that becomes part of the counseling. Oh, by the way, if you want to transition, Johnny, if you want to become Janie, we just want you to know that you'll have twice the tendency to kill yourself than Janie who wants to become Johnny. We just want you to have all the facts so that you can make an educated and informed decision about self-mutilation and mental derangement. So the people facilitating these type of surgeries, they're criminals. They're evil criminals, and they should be arrested. And anyone who says this is good, they're criminals, they're evil, and they should be arrested. And the government should know that, and they don't know that. And I'm afraid that the churches are they're unwilling to say it. I mean, I'm not saying to the churches that you need to go and take over the governments and that you need to dedicate yourself to changing the world. But you should at least be able to, you should at least be willing to stand up and call evil, evil. I mean, what good is the salt if it's lost its savor? I mean, I think that's even in the Bible. You don't have to be an advocate for a theocracy in order to just be willing to call evil, evil, and insist that the government do the same, for crying out loud. So the problem really lies with the churches. That's where the problem lies. Now let's go to let's talk about the government. Did you know that the government passed the Corporate Transparency Act on January 1st, 2024? the Corporate Transparency Act went into effect. It was passed as part of the Anti-Money Laundering Act of 2020, which we're all against money laundering, right? So what is this? By the way, it passed in 2021 after overriding a presidential veto. So it passed under the third Barack Obama administration here. And the law requires companies, small companies, if you have under 500 employees, this is directed at small business, it requires companies to report to the government and identify beneficial owners. And they say that they're going to require this so that they can stop money laundering. And it applies to businesses, I'm sorry, with 50 or fewer employees. It's directed specifically at small business. And the defenders of all this say, well, aren't we all for transparency? Everybody's for transparency. Are you against transparency? What are you, some kind of mafioso with your money laundering? You're against transparency? Well, I'm here to tell you, the whole idea of transparency is deceptive. No person is actually capable of being transparent. And I know that because I know myself, I know everyone. All of us have things about ourselves and things that run through our minds that we would be ashamed to share with other people. That's just a fact. Now, in the past, when the Christian ethic was pervasive, there was an unspoken understanding about this fact. We all knew that none of us were perfect, that we were all capable of dishonesty. But there was a prevailing expectation of honesty that we didn't need to mention. In fact, back in those days, a wise man could spot a fraud, mostly by how honest the fraudster kept telling you he was. That was one of the red flags. Well, fast forward now to the current situation, cleansed of the Christian notion that we're all fallen. And notice that everyone now tells one another not only that they're honest, but they're transparent. As if they're willing to show and tell you everything about themselves and that their business and their operations. Well, I'm willing to let you watch it all without reservation. Transparency. But it's a lie. It's a lie. Transparency is actually the construction and presentation of an edifice designed to give the impression of honesty. The transparent person or organization is actually fallen and prone to dishonesty as it has always been. But their religion forbids them from admitting it to themselves or to anyone else. So instead of just doing their best to be honest and being willing to offer repentance and grace and forgiveness whenever dishonesty emerges, as it always has and will, instead of that, they insist that they're always so honest that you could look through their very soul and find them to be only righteous. But in all honesty, none of us are that honest. And so to imply that you are is dishonest on its face. So the next time someone says transparent, just it's a red flag, that's all. I just throwing that out there. All right, now let's get to EVs. The collapse of the electric vehicle mania, the delusion, is in full swing. Corporations are set to lose hundreds of billions of dollars. I just read about one of the rental car companies who got suckered into purchasing I don't know how many electric cars, and it turns out nobody wants to rent an electric car. Why? Because they're stupid. That's why. It's a stupid idea. Driven by stupidity, promoted by dishonest but transparent people. A new study finds that brakes and tires on electric vehicles, not only are they inefficient, they release almost 2,000 times more particle pollution compared to modern tailpipes in a gas-powered car. Why? Electric vehicles are about 30% heavier than gas-powered cars. And so the brakes and the tires wear out much faster. Yeah, right? Now, you've bought tires, probably. The average car buyer expects their tires to last about 40,000 miles. Well, in the average EV, they last about 13,000 miles. That's almost four times less. If you push it with your tires, you can get 50,000, right? Back in the day. So they're only lasting about 13, and that means the tires are spitting out little black particles of rubber a lot more. Where does that go? It goes into the air, and you end up with the smog in the cities that the liberals hate so much. Uh-huh. Tire wear produces soot, considered one of the most dangerous forms of air pollution linked to all kinds of serious nastiness, including asthma and heart attacks. Nobody likes breathing in smog. And so you don't have to be an environmental hysteric to know that going out in a brown cloud is bad. Nobody wants that. And so if everyone's driving an EV, we're going to have more of that. But not a lot of people are going to be driving EVs because everybody is coming to the realization that it's just stupid. The Issues and Insights author goes on in the story to write, add to this the pollution, the growing pile of false claims and outright lies about EVs. Lower CO2 emissions, a lie. Over the lifetime of an EV and during their production, far more CO2 is emitted, although we don't really care. CO2's not that big of a deal. But the bigger lies are that they're cheaper to operate. They're not cheaper to operate. They're more prone to need repairs, and repairs cost more. They cost more to insure, and charging the battery costs as much or more per mile than gasoline. So there's a range of false fakitudes all around EVs. Add to this the fact that they all look stupid. We saw one of these cyber trucks today. It looks stupid. I'm sorry.
Like a range hood.
What's that?
Look like there's a hood on the range.
Yeah, it's what it looks like. One of the hood on the range in your kitchen. Flip it upside down, put some wheels on it. They look stupid. And what's with all the extra lights? How come the Rivian truck that runs on batteries has to have a giant light beam in between its headlights? Even during the day, when the headlights aren't even supposed to be on, they got a ring of lights around the headlight. They got a bar of light going in between. They got stripes of lights. All these extra lights. Why? It's because they're arrogant. That's why. EVs reek of arrogant self-indulgence. And they will be remembered as a critical mass in the era of arrogant self-indulgence. But they will not be remembered as stupid because too many people went in on it and nobody's going to want to admit any of that. It's going to be like COVID. Everyone's going to want to just forget about that. Let's not bring that up. It's not really fashionable to even discuss it anymore because that's all water under the bridge and all of that. All right. Should we talk about Haiti? What do you say about Haiti? I remember when Jean Bertrand Aristide, the communist, was basically hiring gangs to necklace people and set people on fire. And all of the Western governments bailed him out. And now they've had a succession of governments there who have used the same gangs that Aristide employed to consolidate power. And now the gangsters have taken over. So the politicians think that they can manipulate the gangsters to put them in power, and eventually the gangsters start killing the politicians and the gangsters take over. This is how most of the world has been ruled for most of history. Yeah, except for a few very short-lived periods like this respite we've had in the West since the dawn of Christianity, frankly. And so here it is on full display. Where America is headed, if the politicians are not reined in by the people who are informed by God. And that's us. We have a responsibility first to the gospel. That's our first responsibility, is to tell people that they need Jesus Christ, that he died for their sins, and all they have to do is believe. He'll save them from certain death. That's our first responsibility. But we have a responsibility to tell the government what to do. They don't know. I mean, they're just ambitious, self-absorbed, fallen human beings, and they need information from they need original thought. Original thought from the original thinker and the original speaker, and that's God. And that's why we're here. We're here to help. We don't want to end up like Toronto. Listen to what's going on in Toronto. Car thefts are up by about 25% in Toronto, and police are now getting involved. Okay. Yeah. Now they're handing out door stops that people can jam in the bottom of their door to make it harder for thieves to break down the door to come in and steal your car keys, which is what's happening up there. Police are also telling citizens to leave their key fobs near the door in case car thieves do break in. That way they can simply grab the keys instead of beating you up and then stealing your car. So to avoid being beaten up, leave the keys close to the door in case the door stops. So, you know, the police in Toronto, they protect gay bars and abortion clinics. And the people in Toronto tolerate gay bars and abortion clinics. And so all of them are actually just getting a taste of what they deserve. They're getting a taste of what they deserve and what is coming. If you reject righteousness, you will endure wickedness. And it's fun for a season, but that season ends quickly. And then it's 1,000 years of darkness. And that's why we're here at the Weekly Worldview. We want to stop you from going to hell and suffering through hell on earth. And Lord willing, we'll return next week with more. And I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio, and thank you for tuning in. Should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.